Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win!
Ayler's gone! Goodbye, touchdown, Indy!
Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
Pretty simple, I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Hey, everybody. Welcome aboard. I hope your weekend was good. Welcome into the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Jim Coyle with you as always. No matter where or how you're listening, glad to have you along. Well, on one of our great affiliates, like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call down in Evansville, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJLB, the voice of the region, and Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380, The Fan. Keep it locked where you have it. No need to go anywhere else. And if you're following along on YouTube, make sure you lock in the subscription and notifications toggles as well, all that good stuff. Get that out of the way. Happy Monday. How was your weekend? Lots going on over the weekend, man. How about Scottie Scheffler? We've got the WNBA drama. Indiana had basketball head recruit visit. We'll talk to Kyler Staley about that, in addition to the EYBL notes. All kinds of stuff going on over the weekend. And of course, Indy. Man, lots of drama up in Indy. We saw, and Greg Rakestraw normally with us at the start of this, and it would have been perfect timing. He's going to have to join us in the second hour today, unfortunately. But we'll talk about Indy. I heard him on the radio talking a lot about it. And they're, Team Penske having some issues with failing inspection. And, man, it's there's a lot of drama already. Not, I shouldn't say drama, but when the guy that owns the track and that pretty much owns IndyCar also owns teams that compete in it. Yeah, I can see how a lot of guys could consider that a conflict of interest or see that as a conflict of interest. It's you're going against the guy that owns it, but it's the same with NASCAR. Priest, shout out to everybody on the, we'll get back to that. Shout out to everybody on the comments line as well. Appreciate you guys joining us on the live side. Big shout out to Cheryl Sizemore, the best realtor in the world, from Brick and Ivy Realtor. Cheryl Sizemore Sells at gmail.com. If you want the best realtor ever buying or selling your home, let me tell you, from personal experience, she'll make it happen. She'll make it happen in the best way, in the easiest way possible for you. So make sure you are getting Cheryl Sizemore or you're not getting the best. That's for sure. Let's see, getting back to this weekend, like I said, all kinds of stuff going on. Not only was there a, you know, drama filled game in the, with the, fever and the, sky. Now the WNBA is looking into alleged hateful comments from fans at the Indiana Fever season opener against the Sky in Gainbridge Fieldhouse, in which, I didn't see this game, but I know that there was a foul by Caitlin, and Reese jumped up and was all, you know, whatever. And the, ultimately, I believe the Fever just trounced them. Wasn't it 93-58 or something like that? But on Sunday, the league released a statement regarding fans' comments. Condemning. Sources with knowledge of the situation told the Indy Star a report was filed to the league related to allegations of racist comments directed at Sky forward Angel Reese by fans in the crowd. It does not have anything to do with the take foul, and I'm not sure what that means, which turned into a flagrant one foul the Fever guard Caitlin Clark committed on Reese, or the ensuing scuffle between the teams. We are aware of the allegations of inappropriate fan conduct during yesterday's game, and we're looking into it, yada, yada. There you go. So, I don't know if there was, it should be addressed, but if it's bull crap, is this just whining? Never seems to happen by winners. You ever notice that? Just saying. How's everybody doing? Good start by the, I guess that's a really good look for the Fever as far as that win. Dominant win. Will the Fever follow the Pacers and become the next big thing in Indianapolis this summer? We'll see, man, if they can run off. They can run everybody else off. The Knicks and the Pacers redo coming up starting this Wednesday. Looking forward to that. Cannot wait. Looking forward to talking to Dustin DePerrick about that today. So we'll get to that and set that up. That series begins on Wednesday. A redo, baby. A redo from the old days. Looking forward to it because surely you'll have Bird in the house. And you know Reggie's going to be in the house. You know Spike Lee will be in the house. Man, all kinds of good old things there. But it is going to be a fun series in addition to the Indianapolis 500 coming up and lots to talk about with that. You've got a rookie on the pole, man. First time in 42 years. He was a former F1 prospect, Robert Schwartzman. Not only that, the amazing thing is the front line is set. You want to talk about the most international flavor. I cannot remember. I'm missing one of the drivers. I don't have it in front of me, but I know that you've got a Ward up there. You've got Schwartzman. So you've got a driver from Israel and Pato Award, who's actually, isn't he actually Mexican? Even though he sounds Irish. Just an incredible international flavor. I forget who the third driver up there is. Someone will throw that up there in a minute, but interesting stuff, man. So, and then you've got the guy who was going for three in a row, Joseph Newgarden, who will be able to do that, but he is going to have a very, very, very tough row to hoe because not failing inspections is going to put them into the back of the field, I assume. We'll see. Looking forward to talking to Greg about that. Greg, I got Cheryl Sizemore's name in my head right now, and I've got to quit looking at those comments. But Greg Rakestraw, when he is able to join us, like I said, I heard him on the radio yesterday talking all about the things that were going on at Indianapolis. So, and Indiana had a visitor basketball, had a visitor over the weekend, four-star forward Latrell Allman visited with the Hoosiers. He is one of the top rising juniors in the country. And I guess that's next month. He has scheduled an official visit for June. There you go. 17th and 18th. He did not visit this weekend. My apologies. Allman is 6'8", 225 pounds, standout from John Marshall High School in Richmond, Virginia, is rated a four-star prospect and the number 41 overall prospect in the 2026 class, according to the On3 industry rankings. He also ranked as the number 6 power forward nationally and the number 2 player in Virginia. Indiana extended an offer to Allman earlier this week, joining a growing list of high major programs in pursuit, like Georgetown, Oklahoma State, Michigan State, LSU, Rutgers, and Tennessee are among those involved with his recruitment. Kyler Staley will join us later, and we'll talk to him about all of that and more. It's coming up. So Allman had a breakout season as a junior at John Marshall, averaging 21, almost 22 points and 8 rebounds per game, along with 2.3 blocks. He showcased his efficiency with a 63% shooting clip from the field, 44% from behind the three-point line, 76% from the free throw line. So pretty good shooter. On the grass court root circuit, Allman plays for Team Loaded on the Adidas 3 Triple S circuit. In a recent performance, he posted 25 points on 9 of 12 shooting, along with 5 rebounds in a win over ASAK in Iowa. So we'll talk more about that when Kyler Staley joins us later on in the program. Fired up for Indy, man, I am. You've got the Indianapolis 500 coming up on Sunday, along with, is that game 2 or 3 of the conference finals? I was thinking it's game 3, but the finals don't even start until Wednesday, right? That would seem odd, huh? We'll have to see. Have to figure the schedule out. Lots more coming up on the program. Glad to have you along with us. Greg Rakestraw, normally in early, he's got to do a later hit. So he's got lots going on, as we do, as a lot heading over the weekend, like I said. Scotty Scheffler, how about the PGA? Man, that thing was tight. You had so many guys that were tied together going in on Saturday. It became a game on Saturday. And first two rounds, kind of strange. Nobody was in contention. You had Johnny Vegas up there leading the deal. And then, then Scheffler's 15 total individual PGA Tour wins since his first, 22 to now, or as many as those of Rory McIlroy, Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa, and Justin Thomas. The official world's golfer numbers 2, 3, 4, and 5 combined. Wow. Scheffler's 15 total individual PGA Tour wins since his first in 2022 are as many as Rory McIlroy, Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa, and Justin Thomas. The official world golf rankings numbers 2, 3, 4, and 5 players combined. That's pretty wild. Pretty good. Not bad. So, you've got the Thunder, the young Thunder, moving on in the NBA playoffs as well, taking on the Timberwolves. So we'll see how that side Bears, as they get started. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was brilliant, 35 points as the Thunder. Defense was nasty. They'll face Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves with a chance to go to the finals. So that should be a heck of a series. I don't know who wins that series. I really don't. The Timberwolves have been playing very, very, very well. I'm sure that Our buddy K-Bro is grieving today as the Knicks win the Subway Series. So there's that. Lots more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. And we're back with it and much more. Well, I guess we don't have to break just yet. Actually, because they don't have a guest right now. So we'll just keep it here right now. College softball, the Texas A&M team, man, they enter the NCAA tournament as the number one overall seed after winning 48 games in the vaunted SEC. After a 6-5 loss to Liberty last night, the Aggies become the first number one overall seed to ever lose in the regional round. And it's not like this is an NCAA tournament basketball game either. This happened on their home turf. Woo! Mercy! And then how about the rookie on the pole, man? it's one of the most stunning upsets in Indianapolis qualifying history. This is how this is being looked at, man. First of all, most of you had never heard of Robert Schwartzman. I hadn't. But he is making his first ever oval racing start in any series. Probably why you haven't heard of him. He's a former Formula One prospect, like I said earlier, who found his way to IndyCar this season. He's in a rookie racing startup team in Prima Racing. So it's not just that he's a rookie. It's who he's racing for. This is nuts. You want to talk about an unbelievable upset? That is an unbelievable upset. I mean, wow. Trying to look at his average there. He put together a four-lap average of 232.790. That beats two-time Indy 500 winner Takuma Soto's 232.478. How does a rookie who's never run an oval for a new team? Mind-boggling stuff. But that's the great thing about sports. Now, can he last the race? But hey, there's no point in asking, hey, can he do this? Can he do that? Just because he did something great. Let this be the great thing, man. Let it be the great thing. That's just amazing, though, to see that happen. So you have got an internationally flavored front row for the Indianapolis 500. I hope that Indianapolis people get to watch this. I really do. It'll be a shame if not. But I cannot wait to this race. As always, it's great. And you've got the NBA playoffs that are going on. Playoffs? Right, baby. The Pacers. What are the Pacers going to do? Man, this is going to be a fist fight of a series. You're going to have to get down to get tough to beat the Knicks. You're going to have to play some good defense, but keep that offense rolling. The offense has been pretty good, but New York showed they have some pretty daggone good defense as well in their final defeat of Boston. That game was starting to look a lot like that Celtics massacre that they put on over in the game in which they scored 80 points in the first half. So that's that. Both of these teams can score the basketball. The team that plays, maybe that plays the better defense, might win this game because they're both going to be, or this series, they're both going to be scoring. Looking forward to it, though. I mean, the Knicks, the Pacers, this is the Pacers' opportunity to vanquish this, get to the finals, man. Get to the finals. Get it done. Do something that nobody thinks can be done. The Pacers winning an NBA championship. They come from a mid-market, and do the thing. But you've got Oklahoma City. Man, Minneapolis is a pretty big city, but Oklahoma City, not a major market. New York, yeah, that's big. But we'll see how it turns out, man. But I think the Pacers can do it. No doubt. They have the offense. They have the want to. They had the players. They're pretty healthy. They're being coached well. New York looking good. Plus, we get the Thomas Bryant OG Anunoby for you IU fans. There's a matchup of former Hoosiers. What are your thoughts on whether or not the Pacers can win this series and get to the NBA Finals? I think they can do it. I think they can. Hey, we've got to take a break. We've got plenty more coming. From the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios, welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Monday. So glad to have you guys along. I hope you had a great weekend. Not sure what you decided to do. The weather was pretty nice, other than for Friday night. Man, it was Friday night, I believe. I had to go out of town Friday, fortunately. The tornado's coming, hit Bloomington. And I saw pictures of what happened on, there's an area on Rogers Road here, a post office that got blown to smithereens, and I have not seen that area. But then last night, I was driving up Old 37. I had just to go to the Kroger and saw where it must have come across, which was probably the same area. Now I understand it must have came across Rogers, but it must have bounced because it's weird. It only hit, I mean, you could see this area where it had hit, but it looked more like it must have bounced or something, because there are houses right around that weren't affected. But boy, you could definitely tell it. There was a billboard that was just mangled, like in, it's like if you took a paper clip and twisted it up. That's what it looked like, and that blew my mind. There was a building that I think had been picked up and dropped. There was another car that was turned upside down, but this was all in this tight, compact area. That's what was mind-boggling, because the destruction was massive, but it was minimized as far as the area. So very, very surprised, and glad that, from what I understand, there were few injuries, just amazing that can happen. But that's that time of year, I guess, right? Still here in the spring, so hopefully that'll be the end of that, as we can look forward to more fun things like these Indianapolis 500 that is coming up. And all the players for Indiana and other schools arriving here in the next month, June, in the month of June. Let's see, a week from this Wednesday, we'll be down at Huber's meeting with both coaches. And I'm not sure, Terry Morton may be there as well. I can't recall who all they will have down there. They'll have some players down there as well also. But that happens on the 28th. So if you don't have your ticket for that, you probably are not going to get one. But work out. Try down at Huber's Winery and Orchard. Great place. Great place to go down in Starlight, Indiana, around Borden. Indianapolis, yeah, was talking about the pole position. Man, that is mind-boggling, though. This Robert Schwartzman getting this upset. It is being called one of the more stunning upsets in the Indianapolis 500 qualifying history. And it is, because first of all, no one saw this guy coming, because he's racing for a put together team of sorts. I don't know. I shouldn't say that, because I don't know the background, but it's not a team that is veteran to Indy, I should say. But it's just all crazy. He's the first to do it in 42 years. He's an Israeli-Russian driver. He's the only second rookie since 1950 to win the pole. That he did it with so little experience. This is his first oval. That's another thing that is mind-boggling. It must just be, you know, crazy. Just, you know, I'm just going to drop it and drop the hammer and hold it down and hold on to it, which he must have done pretty well. Man, Indianapolis Speedway, a place which often rewards the bravery of the most veteran oval racers, is a remarkable and shocking feat, being told by the reporter. Coming here for my first oval race, I would never even expect myself to be in this position, he said. I just want to appreciate this moment. I've never raced on an oval before, so it's going to be a learning experience for me. Yeah, he's never raced on an oval before, and he's going to go from the pole position. Well, I guess there's a good thing. He won't have to go through traffic to start the race. But at some point, he's going to have to go through the pit stops and all of that, and we will be going through traffic. And Indianapolis is the pit road is not for the faint of heart. It's when they run the NASCAR races there, it's crazy because it's the most narrow pit road there is. It's because they're used to these more maneuverable Indy cars, but it's still a narrow place that is like crazy man's land. That's the one thing that still amazes me when I watch, whether it's NASCAR or IndyCar, it doesn't matter. And maybe NASCAR seems to be a little more crazy, but when they make their stops on pit road, getting in and out, I do not ever understand how they do that without hitting, wrecking all the time. It is like choreographed madness. Absolutely crazy watching that stuff. But we'll see, man. I cannot wait for Indy to come up. And yeah, the front row, you've got Pato Ward, Pato, and Schwartzman. You want an international flavor? That is, he's a Tel Aviv native. He formerly raced under a Russian license, but switched to an Israeli license in 2022 to avoid anti-Russian sanctions following the invasion of Ukraine. Well, that was handy. But is he from Russia? He says he's a Tel Aviv native. So what's the Russian part? I'm not sure where that comes into it. We'll have to talk to Greg about that. But Sato was almost an upset pole winner himself. The Japanese driver, whose motto is no attack, just no chance, is making a one-off start and no longer a full-time driver. He's racing for the Ray Hall Letterman-Lanigan team, partially owned, of course, by David Letterman. Very happy for the team for putting my car in the front row, which is an amazing result. Yeah, it is. So you've got a guy doing a one-off who's no longer even a full-time driver and a rookie who has never raced on an oval on the front row. How crazy is this? This is not some normal race. This is Indy, baby. This is the Indianapolis 500. And you've got the craziness going on up there, which is awesome, but crazy. You have to love it. And Joseph Newgarden and Penske, Team Penske, failing. And I'm not saying this with happiness, but just adding to the drama. Those guys, I assume, are going to be in the back. Virtually impossible to win the race from the back. Then you've got Kyle Larson trying the double, going for the double. Lots of drama. That's a lot of drama, people. And I'm here for it. Now, those of you that don't live in the Indy area will certainly get to watch the race, and you don't have to worry about it. There will be probably no announcement on this until right up until the end. So, I hope you guys get to watch that. We'll find out. I mentioned Latrell Allman scheduled a visit for Indiana up in June. I ignore the comments that say, not comments, but I thought that may have happened this weekend. I misread that, but he has set his visit. Indiana doing a good job. Darren DeVries and team, they're doing, before the previous staff, they offered a lot of these guys. But the difference to me is palpable on the approach now in Indiana offering these high-profile players. They're not just offering them. They are talking to them. And by talking to them, they're talking to them about what their game is, how their game will work into what Indiana is doing, going to be doing under Darren DeVries. Darren DeVries and his crew are telling them how they will fit in, what they're going to do with them, how to help them, how they're going to help Indiana. I think that there is just hard work going into the recruiting side now. A major difference. And I'm not saying that the recruiters before didn't work hard themselves, but there is a major difference on the approach now. It is being done like a lot of other places have been doing it. But you have to make these guys aware of how important that they are to your program, how important their game can be, how they're going to be a part of it. Not just, hey, glad to have you, son, or love to have you, son, whatever the case may be. Brian's saying that the blackout is officially lifted. Is that not to switch subjects? Awesome. There is no blackout. Perfect. Then we'll talk about that later, how much fun that'll be. But yeah, I think Indiana is just doing a much different, better job recruiting. And they are having conversations, making these players really aware of exactly what their role will be, exactly in exactly what the program will be, exactly how the offense is going to run, how they're going to be a part of that. I think it is much being laid out much more clearly, much more defined roles for guys. And that makes a huge difference when you know, when you feel where your importance is going to lie. It makes a huge difference, in my opinion. And I think it will make a huge difference when they start landing guys. They're not going to land them all, but they are going to start landing elite players. I hate to say I have a feeling. I have an understanding of how they're recruiting. And that will make a difference. That's what made the difference before by not doing it. Indiana wasn't landing those guys. There was a reason. And the few that they did and then lost was for the same reason. Liam McNeely specifically. I could say the same thing probably about Braylon Mullins, but I can't say that for sure. I mean, going to UConn is it's not exactly like it's a step down anywhere. But I wonder, had he been recruited like the guys are being recruited now, had that made a difference? Maybe it would have, maybe it wouldn't have. But we'll sure find out as we go forward. These are kids that are, these are not next seasons. This is for the season after. But I have to say, the job that is being done already for the future, I think it's markedly different than what we've seen more recently. They're identifying the guys, but they're also doing the same things that I was just talking about. But it'll take them a year, Indiana, to have the games under their belt to show the players of 26 and 27, hey, this is what we need you for. This is the style of offense that we're running. Here's where you would be. Here's where we would love to plug you in. This is what we think you can do. This is how we think you can help us. And this is how we're going to help you. All of those things have to be there in recruiting. Kids have to feel wanted, needed, and you have to be the right ones. It has to be the right fit. And they have to understand that. And that should make them want to be more a part of it, because they should want to be a part of something that is being put together with rhyme and reason, not just haphazardly. Brian says he's not sure what DeVries thinks the Big Ten is. He is going to find out. I have no idea what that comment means. It's a conference. It's you don't recruit basketball players, or yeah, you don't recruit athletes specifically because you're in a conference. You recruit athletes to play the game you're coaching the way you want it played, doing the things that you want to do in the style that you want to do it in. It doesn't matter what conference you're in. That stuff is really getting older, because you just crammed four teams from the old Pac-12 into the Big Ten. What does that do? You have Maryland that used to be in the ACC. So, yeah, this conference thing is starting to kind of go away, in my opinion, as far as, Big Ten football is not 3 yards in a cloud of dust anymore. It's not how it's played. Big Ten basketball is not just guys beating up each other in the paint. So, yeah, this conference thought of how things are, I don't agree with anymore. Hey, we've got to take a break. Coming to you from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Hope you had a good weekend. If not, you should have. And whatever you're out and about, head out to stop by Hard Truth. They're in Nashville, Indiana. 325 acres of great places to just traverse, great food, great drinks. Pick up some beverages there to take home with you, some of the greats. There's sour mash bourbons and cinnamon vodka. Let's see, what else do we have? The roasted rum, toasted rum. Oh my. Yeah, they've got some good stuff, man. But it's a great place to stop by as well. But it's also available where most of you live, no matter where. Florida, they got you covered. Kentucky, got you covered. Back with plenty more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Monday. I hope you had a great weekend. I certainly did. It was relaxing, I guess you'd say, after a while. Friday wasn't, but Saturday was. And looking forward to talking to Greg Straw from the ISC Sports Network as his coverage of Indy as he works for the Speedway, and Dustin Napierik as the Pacers getting ready to take on the Knicks in the Eastern Conference Finals. I believe that series begins on Wednesday. And of course, Kyler Staley as Indiana basketball sets a meeting with one of the top forwards in the country. David Pollack had a laugh at the Big Ten's expense. Add the former Georgia star to the list of college football personalities who are making fun of the Big Ten for refusing, and I've talked about this. I agree with this. Fox's Big Noon Kickoff. I think it is ridiculous that you put some of the biggest games of the day on at noon. A, that's 9 a.m. on the West Coast. It is just dumb. Now, here's something I was not aware of. I was not aware that the Big Ten, is it the Big Ten?
does not allow their teams. The Big Ten prohibits this. They don't let their teams do night games during the season. They don't do primetime night games. They haven't done that, Pollock said. I did not know that. I didn't stop to think about it. There are no Big Ten night games. Is that? That can't be right. Is that right? I mean, I know during the non-con it happened, but it is the dumbest thing. And I agree with, he says it's the dumbest thing. And I don't really usually agree with him on a lot of stuff because he is an SECer, but I agree with that. It is dumb. Why would you not showcase the best you have in the best way possible? Noon is not it. Part of the country hasn't even woken up yet. And there are more games at noon probably than at any other time. Why? CBS owns the afternoons. I get that. Is Fox afraid to challenge at night? I just don't get it. I mean, they call it prime time for a reason. It's the prime time to catch an audience. Noon is never going to be prime time. To me, they waste so many games by putting them on at noon. I mean, Ohio State fans have been going nuts because of getting put on at noon. For one thing, it's because they want to tailgate. And that does screw up tailgating as well. So we'll see. But I have to agree with that. Hey, Kyler Staley's going to jump on. We'll add Kyler in here. Kyler, how are you doing, brother?
What's going on, Jim? How's it going with you?
Oh, you know, man, you know, just living the dream. A lot going on with Indiana basketball. I know that they have set up a visit with very, very, very important Mr. Latrell Almond.
Yep. That is his name. Yeah. He that was confirmed over the weekend. Plays for, I believe, Team Loaded for 3SSB on the Adidas circuit. So 2026 four-star forward. Pretty much a guy, you know, that versatility that kind of DeVries is looking for. That's kind of him, both on, you know, the offensive end and the defensive end, physical forward as well. So, but I think the big thing is like now, you know, they had Chase Branham on a visit last weekend. Them just getting visits set this summer, you know, now that the transfer portal, you know, month has kind of passed and pretty much the team is set. You know, obviously you still got situations with Goody and Leal and stuff. Now it's time to focus on, you know, the high school recruiting, focusing on the 2026 class and getting a guy like Latrell Allman, you know, Chase Branham, and they'll probably get a few other guys here confirmed. I would assume probably this week, maybe next week as well, as far as some summer visits.
Yeah, and I was just talking that getting these guys, these offers that have been going out to, which have all been here of late, high profile guys for the 26 class, for the 27 class. I feel the difference is palpable on how these recruitments are going, how these guys are being approached, that they're being shown and told, hey, this is what we're going to be doing, and this is how you will fit in. This is what we would like to see with you, and giving them a much, much better understanding of what their place will be.
Yeah, and of course, you know, with the 2026 class, if you kind of think about it a little bit, DeVries and his staff are a little bit behind the eight ball, just a little bit, you know, because obviously DeVries takes a new job, and really the film that he has is just, hey, this is what I did at West Virginia, this is what I did at Drake. Not a lot of those 2026s, 2027s as well, not a lot of them, you know, they probably kind of want to wait and see a little bit, you know, what's Indiana basketball going to be about, what's going to be a DeVries' system at IU. Obviously, we can play off of what he did at West Virginia, Drake or whatever. But, you know, these kids nowadays want to see, you know, the then and now. I think that they'll get some good names out of the 2026 class. The guys that they're offering are very high profile guys. They just got kind of a little bit of a catch up to do. I think the 2027 class, going into next year, next summer, he'll have, you know, some, a lot of time to, you know, kind of build those relationships and, really just kind of recruit those guys from, you know, kind of start to finish. And I think that's where you're going to really, really to see what DeVries can do, you know, in that 2027 class while also getting some, I think we'll get some solid names coming out of the 2026 class as well.
Yeah, no doubt that I think that they'll benefit from what they're able to show on the floor, but that's going to be a catch 22. They're going to have to be able to show on the floor that they can do some things, but I'm still wondering. The roster is pretty much locked in. I mean, we kind of know what it is, and we know that Sam Harris and Sam Alexis, yep. Josh Harris. I keep getting those two mixed up. are going to be, but they're going to be the front court guys. Not that they're alone, but they're the two of the guys that's going to be around the rim more than even Reed Bailey, I would assume.
I think Reed Bailey will be more rim oriented. Obviously, he's a guy that can stretch the floor out and stuff. He's going to be Indiana's best stretch forward. As far as what, you know, I do kind of agree with you to a certain extent. Josh Harris, Sam Alexis, they're more comfortable around the rim. So depending on how they're going to run their front court rotation, we still don't know. Is it just going to be Reed Bailey kind of as that small ball four that they're going to play? Are they going to have Josh Harris, Sam Alexis start next to him? We really just don't know. And then you throw in the factor of like Trent Sisley. Is he going to be more of a wing? Is he going to play kind of a stretch four type of role as well? We just don't know yet. So, but I think Indiana's got a solid front court rotation. You probably would have liked for them to get a rim protector, but they're just not going to have that this year. And if you look past, you know, with West Virginia, Drake, DeVries never really had a true rim protector. And I think that's going to be kind of the same case here with Indiana as well. They're going to, you know, rely on trying to help. Hopefully the backcourt guys can kind of stop the ball before it even gets to the rim. So, but yeah, I like the rotation that they have. It's a smaller rotation, but I think nowadays in college basketball, you do have a smaller rotation of front court guys where you want to have kind of a deeper rotation when it comes to the wings and the guard play.
No doubt. And, it's going to be interesting for Indiana fans. I think they're going to see a much more, interesting style of basketball next year. No matter what, they're going to see a team that gets after it. And no offense to anybody, you know, previously, but I'm just saying this team is going to get up and down the floor a little bit. They're going to be shooting the ball, we know, because that's the kind of players they have. Faster paced action. Defense is going to be a big key to this team. They're going to have to play defense as hard as they play otherwise.
Yeah, and they got gritty guys to be able to do that and stuff. Right now, it's just, I think this summer, they'll really try to work on you kind of picking the spots on where guys will, you know, excel on the defensive end. But I like the guys that they got. Tayton Conaway, he's just a ball hawk. That's what he does. He's after the basketball. He's going to steal. He's going to get a lot of steals. He'll probably even lead the team in steals if I had to guess. And he's going to be the kind of the guy to kind of start that fast break transition. And then the rest of it is just all about guys just buying in on the defensive end. And then obviously DeVries putting them in right spots. You know, if there's a certain guys that maybe kind of struggle a little bit on the defensive end, maybe hiding that guy as well. But I like the positional versatility that they have on the defensive end as well, because they have a lot of guys that are long, athletic. You can put them in multiple spots on the defensive end to be able to succeed on that end. But, you know, this team's going to be gritty. They're going to be tough. Every single DeVries team from Drake to West Virginia, they've always been tough, gritty on the defensive end. And then the offense kind of comes with it. And I fully expect that's what Indiana's going to be about next year.
Absolutely. Make sure you go to thehoosier.com. If you don't have a subscription, get one. Kyler Staley, Alec Lasley, and much, much more. Lots and lots of information there, brother. Appreciate you, Kyler.
Yep. Talk soon.
You betcha. Hey, we've got more coming up, including Greg Rakestraw as the Indy 500. Boy, do we have some stuff to talk about there. I've talked a bunch about it earlier, but much more coming from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday. I'm glad to have you along for the ride. Greg Rakestraw joins us now from the ISC Sports Network and fresh off of his duties at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, where I heard him yesterday. How are you, brother?
I'm good, my friend, and thanks for being flexible with my time. As you know, in the month of May, things get busy and things get moved around. So I had a 50-minute window in the car to have this conversation with you, and here we are.
You are a busy, busy man. Yeah, I was able to catch some of your broadcast yesterday. And what a day. All kinds of drama. The front row is just international row, man. It is mind-boggling. First of all, you've got an Israeli, you've got a Japanese driver, and is Pato O'Ward Mexican?
That is correct. He is Mexican. He has spent so much time here in the States that, you know, there's not exactly much of an accent for Pato at this point. And obviously a last name of O'Ward doesn't sound very Mexican either. But yes,
Pato is from Mexico. That's what I love. That's what I love, the O'Ward. I love that.
Pato is a melting pot oven to himself at this point. So, but yes, it's very much an international feel, but it's also, you know, a front row that we didn't see coming. You know, and so I'll take them one by one for you. Folks, this might be the most unlikely pole sitter in the history of the race. Robert Schwartzman is a talented racing driver, but this will be his first oval track race. He has a background in Formula One. He was a reserve driver for Ferrari the last 3 years. He's about 24, 25 years of age, and like a lot of guys, they will come over here if they feel there is not a path to a Formula One seat for them. Prema, the team that he is running for, is a brand new team this year that, again, has a background in terms of the junior series leading to Formula One. A lot of current Formula One drivers drove for a Prema team in Europe, and this is their first year in the States. So as a team, this is their first oval series. Their two drivers in Callum Ilott and Robert Schwartzman are both in the bottom four of the points in terms of the 27 drivers that run full time. Until yesterday, their best qualifying effort in the first five races of the season was 16th. And Robert Schwartzman, after the Prema team combined the two cars on Tuesday, turned 24 laps of practice. 24. One car turned 6, one car turned 18. One of their cars is on the pole for the Indianapolis 500. It is the third rookie all-time to win a pole. It is jaw-dropping to think that the conversation a week ago was, are the two Prema cars going to be racing each other to avoid being bumped out of the show? And instead, one of them will lead the field to green 6 days from now.
Yeah, I don't know which is more amazing, the fact that this is Schwartzman's first oval race, or this is Prema is just such a, they're not a rookie, but you know, they're not an indie team. Yeah, and it's just crazy, and you're going against all that they're going in. It's Indianapolis on top of that. First, it's not just an oval race, it's Indy. It's Indianapolis. Like any track, you need to know the spots, the marks, the grooves, which lanes are running. To come in as a rookie with all of that, it's mind-boggling.
Now, the number two driver is Takuma Sato, who is well-known in Indy circles, but Takuma's 48. And Takuma no longer runs the series full-time. He is just running the 500 for a second consecutive year. The year before that, he ran all of the oval races for Chip Ganassi. Takuma won the race in 17, won the race in 20. But to give you an idea of kind of his veteran status, he first ran Indianapolis as part of his Formula One career. And the last time F1 raced in Indy was 18 years ago. So Takuma's a veteran. It was generally thought that because of Takuma's aggressive style, that he would probably qualify the best of the Ray Hall cars. But of the four Ray Hall cars, again, to give you an example, the next best qualifier of their team is 18th, and Takuma is sitting second. And so, again, the 1-2 combination, to put this in perspective, it'd be like putting an exacta box on the 19th and 20th favorite horses in the Kentucky Derby, and it hits. That would be the equivalent of what we saw in qualifying yesterday.
Yeah, that sounds like Calvin Borrell would be riding and get that deal done. But yeah, that's just adding the drama to it. And I hope if Dustin can hear, I hope he can. If you can come on at 10, I've had to do some juggling this morning. So if you can hear us, if you can do 10 o'clock, that would be great. But I just wanted to let him know if he can happen here, which I think he was able to hear that. So that's perfect. Yeah, the drama. So now you've got a guy on the pole position who's never raced an oval race, who's never raced an Indy. That right. would scare the living crap out of the other drivers, most likely. But the sheer fact that he was able to get onto the pole has to show that this dude's got some skills, first of all. You don't just go around there. Nobody just jumps out and runs around Indianapolis at 232 miles per hour and doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah, Robert's run some of the best equipment in the world. Again, he's been in Ferrari equipment, not as their top driver, but as a reserve driver for each of the last 3 years. So he has run up the top levels of the sport. And they made steady progress. You know, they started to get towards the top 10, top 15 in practice on Friday. You go, okay. The qualifying draw helped them. They went out fourth on Saturday. And the thought was, hey, they made the fast 12. Ted's come back yesterday. Like, all right, Schwartzman's going to start 12th. Okay, great. You know, that's a wonderful story for them. Then he makes the fast six and you're like, and obviously there was some assistance there with Scott McLaughlin crashing. And then the two Penske cars failing tech. And so now it's like, all right, you're going to start in, you know, inside the top nine. He's a great speed. Holy crap, he's going to start inside the top six. And it just kept getting better. But again, a rookie at Indianapolis, yes. But as experienced of a race car driver as you could be before getting a look in the IndyCar series. And to give you an idea of some of the other kind of IndyCar drivers that have F1 ties, you know, Sato drove for many years on teams that were mid to back end of the pack in Formula One. Alexander Rossi and Marcus Ericsson both drove in Formula One, but really did so on non-competitive teams, turn laps, but were never going to factor, you know, into a race win. So there are other guys that have F1 experience that are in this IndyCar paddock. And so again, Schwartzman is yes, a rookie, but nobody thinks of him as a rookie.
That's kind of like when a year or two ago on the street course of Chicago, the NASCAR race, SVP, right. which is Shane Van
Gisbergen, yes.
comes over from Australia, who had raced in a series over there. So nobody here had really heard. The drivers are probably familiar with him, but he comes in and he wins his first ever start in NASCAR on a road course there in Chicago. But he was kind of a road course specialist. He was no rookie in by any means either. But he has not been able to do the same on the ovals. But anyway, Indianapolis, man, there's so many storylines. Now you've got the Ganassi, or not Ganassi, but the, oh my goodness, the man, I can see him, the track owner.
Roger Penske.
Team Penske. Man, I was drawing a name blank. Team Penske's guys getting a blow in after inspection, and I'm assuming they're going to be relegated to the back of the field.
So, no, they are the fourth row. In other words, they did not fail tech inspection on Saturday, so they were guaranteed to be in the top 12, and literally they are set by their times on Saturday. So, McLaughlin, who crashed yesterday before quals, he will start 10th, and then Joseph Newgarden will start 11th. Will Power will start 12th. So if they had failed tech and not passed tech in time on Saturday, they would have been at the back of the field. But because they passed technical inspection on Saturday, those times get to hold. So they start 10th, 11th, 12th.
Look, that then some interest still. So now we still have the drama. Can Joseph Newgarden pull off a third win in a row at Indianapolis? Which, that's crazy to think of that. It's like, wow. We haven't had that chance for how long has it been since that opportunity's even been around?
2003, Elio Castroneves, who won in 01 and 02, was the runner up in 03. This will be the sixth chance for a third consecutive win. Let me see if I can do this without notes off the top of my head. Wilbur Shaw in the 30s, Maury Rose in the 40s, Bill Vukovich, who sadly died trying to do that in 1955. Al Unser Sr. in 1972, who was also the runner-up, Elio then in 01 and 02, and Joseph Newgarden as of 6 days from now.
Well, let's hope that it happens. If for those fans that want to see that, I'm sure everyone has their own driver. That's another thing about Sato. This is a one-off for him. He's on the front row. How does that happen for Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan? He's not even a full-time driver anymore. He's on the front row.
It's the bigger story for Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan, just because they have struggled so much at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on the oval. You know, for example, there are three cars for the road course, qualified fast six. You know, as the depth of the field has continued to grow, it's been a struggle to keep up for the Ray Hall team. They have had far more success on road course races than they have on oval track races. And so Takuma Sato qualifying as well as he did, yes, being now a part-time guy is a story. You got to go back. You don't have to go back that far. The late Dan Weldon in 2011 won the race as a part-time driver. I think it's tougher to do that now than it used to be, but it's not impossible. But it's really about Takuma bucking the trend of Ray Hall not having top-end speedway speed to finish to be second in qualifying. To me, that was the big story of him sitting middle of front row.
And Brian on the comments is saying that Prima missed the first day of practice because their brand new speedway cars were not even fully assembled yet. Is that correct?
Correct. So again, they ran 24 laps. They were late to get out. And again, Tuesday's practice, because of rain and storms in the area, was compressed to about 2.5 hours. But a lot of teams were turning 50, 60, 70 laps on that day. They ran a combined 20. One car ran 6, the other car ran 18. That's what they did on Tuesday.
I laugh because that is just so amazing. This is a movie in the making. If one of these drivers were able to win this race, that would instant Hollywood coming. You can see him putting the cars together before practice. Oh, dropping the nuts. Oh my God. This sounds like this is just going to be a wild, wild race because of, I haven't even mentioned Kyle Larson yet because he's starting to become an afterthought. And that's crazy that someone's trying to attempt to do the double and it's almost an afterthought because there's so much other drama going on.
Correct. I mean, and so the Schwartzman and Sato are new additions to the storylines. So here are the big ones going in. Newgarden trying to win his third. Pelot trying to win his fifth of six races to start the year. And if that happens, and he's a first-time Indy 500 winner, again, this is crazy to say a third of the way through the season. He has almost locked up the points championship. Like he would have to finish last a couple of times for there to really be a points race this year. He became the first guy since, again, Dan Weldon about 20 years ago, and this was not last year, but a couple of years ago, to really have locked up the series championship before the last race of the season. He's 97 points clear of the field. Jim, 54 points is the most points that you can claim during a given race. So he is almost two races clear of the field. And there's 11 or 12 races, pardon me for having the math at my fingertips, left after the conclusion of this one. Again, and so that is a sight to behold. Elio Castro Neves does have a chance to win a fifth Indy 500. This is his 25th start, which is fourth most in the history of the race. But frankly, I just don't see a scenario where Elio's going to win. Starting from row 8, row 9, last couple of years, he's kind of driven around in 20th most of the time. Kind of thinking this might be the last go-around for him. It might be this go-around for Mark Andretti. Row, this is his 20th. It might be the last go Carpenter, who starts in row 6. When Scott Sunday, it'll be his 408th career start, which is the most in the history of the IndyCar series, passing Mario Andretti, who made 407. So those are some of the storylines, and you are right. Kyle Larson is not really being talked about because, frankly, that car's not been competitive. He started on the outside of row number 7. He's had a couple of wrecks. Year 2 has not gone as well as year 1. And I kind of get the inclination that this might be the last time Kyle tries it, just because it's not, it's not been last year. I think he had a legitimate shot to win the race. No, but I thought we'd at least talk about him in the top 10. I don't see that happening this time around, Jim. I really don't.
Yeah, I've seen the same thing. It just has not had the strength. And there's probably, this is probably so hard because this race, so much has to happen. You have to have the great equipment, but everything has to happen. Some luck, pit stops, fuel strategy, tires, all of that, stay out of wrecks. And he's dealing with so many other things as well with NASCAR. And so there's so much going on. It is very, very hard to do. And to do all of that focus, it's, and now, and then he has to go off and run another 600 miles after the 500. So it's just,
and yeah. Jim, I think frankly, that's the win for him. I think the win for Larson, if he can finish on the lead lap, you get 500 miles in, you check that box. If he finishes on the lead lap of the Coca-Cola 600, and obviously in NASCAR, you know, Kyle is a threat to win every race. But if he runs all 1,100 miles, of the guys that have run both races, only one has finished on the lead lap on both simultaneously, and that was Tony Stewart 24 years ago. So I really think in his heart of hearts, that's the win for him here, finishing on the lead lap and running all 500 miles.
Absolutely, sir. What is up next for you?
So I get to host the IHSAA tennis pairing show tonight, final pairing show for the season. I'm filling in for Jake Query on The Fan tomorrow. And then I do 4 days of college baseball on ESPN Plus for the Horizon League. And then I get to do morning PA and post race show for the Indianapolis 500 on Sunday. So just your average week.
Yeah, just a few things here and there. This year, the Indy race on Fox TV, right?
Correct. So after a successful run on NBC, NBC was a great partner. NBC gave him great coverage. Fox offered him a better deal. You know, every race is on Fox, Network Fox, during the IndyCar season. 3 hours of quals coverage yesterday on Fox. All Indy 500 practices were on FS1 or FS2. The same deal exists during the course of this racing season. So, yes, it is a change. So, for example, in the Indianapolis area, races on 59 and not, you know, Channel 13. You know, in the Louisville area, races on 41, not on Channel 3. So, yes, it moves to Fox this year. Lots of the same television pieces like Kevin Lee, Townsend Bell, and James Hinchcliffe. But, yes, Fox TV is where you can find it. And coverage from a television standpoint starts at 10 a.m., green flag about 12:30.
And we still have, of course, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network and our friend Chris Denary in Turn 4, baby. As I know he enjoys that, he's on with us each week as well, so we'll be talking to him again about that. But lots of fun stuff heading up towards Sunday. It's here.
Yes, it is. Can't wait.
All right, buddy. Greg Rakestraw from the ISC Sports Network. Appreciate you. Make sure you check out the ISC Sports Network. We've got lots more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Hey, welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday. So glad to have you along, no matter how or where you're listening. Appreciate you. Just give us a like button if it's on via social media. Give me a follow on Twitter, as a matter of fact, as well, at Jim Coyle, ISB. I would appreciate that. And if you have not gone to thehoosier.com and signed up and gotten a subscription, please do so. Those guys are doing a fantastic job as heading into the recruiting time of the summers, and they are all hitting the recruiting the floors along with you, and that information will be up in there. Appreciate you. They've got a great deal going. Buck for the first month, half price off the rest, and appreciate giving those guys some assistance so they can give you the best coverage as possible. Go to thehoosier.com now with On Three, which, man, that national content is crazy good as well. Looking forward to Dustin Appirig joining here in just a little bit. We'll talk about the Pacers as they get things ramped up on Wednesday. Piece in the thehoosier.com, as a matter of fact, talking about Thomas Bryant and how his energy and help off of the bench were beneficial in their run. He averaged just 10 minutes a game in that series against the Cavaliers, but that's pretty good, 10 minutes a game, so he's not just riding a pine. He checked into the game at the 7:04 mark, I guess, in the last series. After a few defensive rebounds, Bryant took his first shot of the game. It was a block by Cavs center Evan Mobley. Instead of that being the defining moment of his game, he went back to the original thought when he joined the team, come out and contribute. He told his teammates from the start, even now, I still believe the same thing. I always just wanted to come in and contribute and not be detrimental to the team, Thomas said after the 114-105 win. So he is a part of that. And no, he's not a gigantic part, but, you know, when you if you get into a game, you're a part of what's going on, and you're being counted on to be a part of what's going on. Dustin DePirik from the Indy Star joining us now. Dustin, I was just talking about Thomas Bryant not playing a huge part, but still, if you're getting into a game in a series, you're impacting the game and you're being counted on to do some things. You're being counted on to hold serve probably, sure. You know, and so they count on those guys to do that. And
yeah,
to win, you have to have everybody playing their best, right down to the guys that you were just giving the whatever the little minutes to.
Situational. Yeah, no, I mean, it's that's the biggest thing is obviously you have your rotation and you have your situational guys. And basically the Pacers bench is set up.
I like that word, situational.
Yes. The Pacers bench is set up where you're looking at, you know, basically they have their starters. They have their three main sub guys, which is TJ McConnell, Benedict Mathurin, and Obi Toppin. Those guys are going to play 15 to 20 every single night. And then it's Thomas Bryant, Ben Shepherd, and Jairus Walker are guys that are coming in. And they're all, you know, they're playing at least one, usually two of those guys every night. But it's a question of what do you need at that point? If they basically, if they feel like they need to play bigger when Miles Turner comes off the bench, they'll put Bryant in. If you know they can play smaller lineups where Obi Toppin can play the five and they don't have to bring Thomas in. But you know, and if Miles Turner picks up foul trouble or if there's a matchup that doesn't quite fit, you know, it's important for him to step in and get some minutes. And it was important for him to step in game five. He had some really important ones, you know, scored 9 points in those last 4.5 minutes to help close that game out. That was really big. He was really important in that stretch. Rick Carlisle made a point of singling him out in terms, you know, basically after it, you know, that series clinching win to say he got his the sentence he said was those are as good of minutes as you could ask from a backup center. I mean, that was everything that you could need. So, you know, he's been that, you know, all year, basically. I mean, and he's not necessarily been, you know, they don't have to play him, you know, because the five and they can mix and match lineups. So, you know, they're using Siakam or they're using Toppin in smaller lineups or that they're, you know, using those guys together. So they don't have to play Bryant when Turner comes off the floor. But I mean, he's usually given 10 good minutes a night. I mean, he makes mistakes. Sometimes he's out of position. You know, he's not always, you know, he's not an offensive, you know, like he's not dominating or anything like that, but he's made some big shots. He can step out and hit threes a lot like Turner can. That keeps him there. Plays with a lot of energy, even if he doesn't always, you know, have his assignment totally right. You know, he's always attacking. Basically, he's always, you know, just fighting on defense, you know, trying to block shots, you know, trying to you know, box out for rebounds, stuff like that. You know, he has made a big impact and he's been important. I mean, they love him. I mean, they really, like, as a team, you notice, you know, when you're around these guys enough, basically, like, how important clubhouse culture is and a team's clubhouse culture and a guy's ability to get along with everybody. It is a skill, you know, basically, when you get to the point where you're not a top eight guy, your ability to fit in really matters. I mean, James Johnson doesn't play, and the fact that he fits in gets him a contract every year. Basically, that's part of it. You know, he also scares everybody because when he stands up, everybody sits back down. But you know, like Bryant really matters. I mean, I've just seen little moments in the, you know, the locker room over the course of the year that have been, you know, like you can sense how Thomas matters. I mean, like he when they picked him up, you know, basically from Miami, he wasn't playing at Miami at all. And the Heat basically, knowing he's a nice guy, but knowing he wasn't going to get any opportunity, and knowing that Kel Ware was you know, going to be ahead of him and they wanted to give him a shot, you know, they basically, the Heat gave him the Pacers for practically nothing. Like, it's a pick swap, which basically is like, all right, you give us your pick, we'll give us our pick. We don't know which one's going to be any better, but like, we just have to trade something. Like, we have to take in to give him to you, but we're happy to give him to you. You know, like, we're happy to give him a chance. You need a backup center because you got two guys out on the shelf with Achilles tendon tears. So, you know, like, good opportunity for him. We get to open up a roster spot. We don't have him standing in the way of Kel Ware anymore. Here you go. But they knew that he knew he was going to be a good personality guy. And then Bryant just kind of told them, like, okay, what do I have to do to not be a problem? Like, what can I do just to help at all? Like, I'll be happy to make any positive impact for this team whatsoever. And, you know, he's done, he has hit that bar. And again, he's just been, you know, he's really happy to be there. Like, it makes a difference when a guy's really happy to be there. And he is, like, he knows he's part of a really good team. I don't think he knew it was going to be this good, or that it was going to get this far. And so I think he is really enjoying the ride, and you can tell. It's fun to watch him. He's great with us from a media standpoint. I think he always has been, from hearing from Zach and everybody who covered him, you know, when he was still at IU. You know, like, the first thing they told me was like, man, you're going to love Thomas Bryant from just a media standpoint. And he's been a joy, you know, as far as that's concerned. So he's just fit in really well. I don't know what the future holds for him. You know, obviously he is on a 1-year deal. So he's a guy they have to make a decision about. And, you know, but certainly won't cost them very much to keep him. And, you know, like, I would think they'll try to make a spot with him as a third center last year. As you'll imagine, Isaiah Jackson will be healthy by that point and good to go. So, you know, whether they keep him or not, I'm not sure. But I mean, I think they'd be fine to keep him around as a third option going forward, just to have because you just need depth at that five spot, because guys get hurt and guys get in foul trouble. And, you know, like, they are big dudes. So they tend to wear out a little bit faster. So you need somebody, obviously. Maxie needs to go out. But yeah, so, you know, he's doing a good job for himself. Basically, he's making a good case, whether it's for the Pacers or someplace else, just to be a depth guy somewhere going forward.
Yeah. And he checks a lot of boxes. I know that this is not the first box, but I'm gonna jump to it first. You know, being a former IU guy, you've got some fans in that regard, and sure, that's great, but that only goes so far. You have to be contributing. You'd be able to contribute, to be a positive influence in the locker room, to be someone that they like having around, that, like you said, that wants to be around. He checks all of those boxes, though. So that's a big plus for him. It's a big plus for the Pacers, and keeping him, I think, would be a probably wise move.
Yeah, no, I mean, and the IU thing matters a little. I mean, it was something that that Rick Carlisle mentioned when we talked about, you know, them bringing him in, what they liked about him, stuff like that. You know, it's obviously they got him as early as they could, because basically the rules are, if you sign a contract in the offseason, you can't be traded until December 15th. Like, that's the deadline. And, like, he had, you know, kind of re-upped with the Heat. And I remember just talking to Carlisle about him, about, like, what they liked about him. And he mentioned the IU thing, just saying, like, you know, it means he really wants to be here. You know, like, he has people here. He has a familiarity with it. I mean, like, obviously you don't spend a lot of time in Indy when you're at IU, you know, as a player necessarily. Certainly you'll play maybe Big Ten tournament there, or you know, at the time there was still, the Crossroads Classic was still kicking. But you don't necessarily, like, you know, it's not where you spend a lot of your time, but you see IU fans and like, they're everywhere. And then you see people in red and you remember them because they came to games and stuff like that, and they introduced themselves. And so he can sense that there's, you know, like, it's a sense that he matters in Indy. And it's like, Miami is obviously a place where you can get lost, you know, just in general. I mean, obviously, because it's just, it's huge. It's a scene. It's this, it's that, it's whatever. I mean, Miami's just a different, you know, as far as a place to be. I mean, certainly you love the weather. You know, there are things people, you know, the guys love about it. There's the nightlife. There's what else, whatnot. But obviously when you're at Indiana, like, there's a connection that's different. And, I think that gave him even more of a reason to want to be there. You know, it was like on top of, you know, the biggest thing was just like he just wasn't getting playing time in Miami, you know, and it wasn't coming. Like it wasn't like he could stick around for the rest of the year and there was going to be an opportunity. You know, you certainly saw the opportunity Kel-El Ware got. You know, they certainly had noticed that he was going to be the guy, that they were going to put a lot of investment into making sure Kel-El Ware got an opportunity. And you know, there wasn't going to be the same kind of type of commitment to get that for Thomas Bryant. So that part adds to it. But yeah, he checks every single box that you could ask for a backup center. You know, I mean, that's it again, it's a key piece that matters. It's not, you don't have to be a superstar to do it. You know, on some level, it's better that you don't, that you're not. But he is perfectly serviceable. He does the job that is asked for him to do. And, you know, like, you know, he's singing in the locker room when they, you know, put jams on in pregame, you know, like they don't always, but like they're from time to time, like I have seen some, you know, some impressive arrangements musically in pregame, and Thomas is generally upfront about that. They don't do it at home because they bounce around too much, but on the road, every once in a while, they'll get into it, and you'll be like, "All right, you know, Brian's front and center right there."
And I assume you'll be going to New York for the games,
of course.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. That'd be, man, just getting to. I'm jealous because getting to go to MSG for something like this. This is magical, man. This is the Knicks in the playoffs, and Knicks fans think that they have a shot to go. Well, they do have a shot to go to the finals and beyond. And oh man, whoo,
yeah.
Assembly Hall is great, but I've never enjoyed this situation. So I'm saying this from an assumption standpoint, but oh
yeah,
I can imagine what being at MSG is going to be like for a Pacers-Knicks playoff showdown. Spike Lee, Larry Ben's Bird, surely got
everybody.
I mean, Reggie's got to go. Larry's got to go. You got to get the legend there. I mean, this should bring everybody out.
Should. Yeah, no, I mean, it will. They were obviously there last year, you know, in the Garden for the conference semifinals. And that, I mean, it'll be dialed up a notch, but it was plenty dialed up last year. Like, it wasn't like you didn't feel like you were at low mass. I mean, it was the real thing.
I don't know if this thing to get dialed up a couple of notches from
the start. There was a game set.
Coming off of it. Well, your Pacers are coming off of a chippy series. Actually, back-to-back chippy series. I mean, Milwaukee was chippy, and so Cleveland got chippy.
And at least they hugged at the end, and nobody flew a flag.
Oh, yeah.
You know, nobody grabbed each other by the back of the neck at the end of the Cleveland series. It was pretty respectable. I mean, it was chippy, but it wasn't like – there wasn't a lot of – well, Milwaukee, they were, you know, they were close to blows, and Cleveland never really got that far. But, no, I mean, it's going to be – like, again, we – you know, like, it got to seven last year, and you saw all the stars come out to put it simply. I mean, like and it'll be even more this year. I think, I mean, it's a blast because you can tell these are the most beloved teams in either city in a while. That there's really connection to both of them. I think the, you know, Indiana fans are really starting to get what's going on with this Pacers team. And it's, you know, like obviously by its nature, in Indiana as a whole, you know, tends to grab a hold of its high school teams, of its college teams, you know, that kind of thing. And you generally, they kind of wake up and see where the Pacers are at the end of March and are like, whoa, okay, either A, I don't need to care about that, or B, wow, I really do need to care about that. And so, you know, like this is one of those years that they've really had to care about. And now it's 2 years in a row. And I think when you're really watching this team, you can get a sense of just how good they really are. And I think this group in particular, you're seeing how they really developed a theory of the case. And you get a sense of what their belief comes from the idea that they know they're going to wear teams down. They believe in their capacity to exhaust you. And it makes them believers at every level. And so obviously there's a connection with the Pacers and the Knicks. I mean, it's, you know, on the flip side of it, you look at the Knicks from a distance and it's hard not to connect with, with those guys. You know, basically it's like you can see how this team is easy to love for New York. You know, Brunson is an easy superstar to get behind. You know, he really is. And just one super sharp guy, funny guy. You know, they've got, you know, he and Josh Hart have their podcast and they're hilarious. And, you know, like he and Halliburton, I mean, they did a, you know, WWE SmackDown thing together where they were faking like they were going to fight. You know, like as good of a personality as Halliburton is for Indy, I mean, Brunson's that good too. You know, like he is just one of those guys. Like he's sharp, he's witty, he's quick, he's funny, you know, and he is just a bulldog of a competitor, and he took less money to make the contracts work, you know, and he gives you buckets every night. I mean, it's different approaches where Halliburton's not, you know, just trying to go score hell or high water. Like he is trying to distribute first and foremost, where Brunson is just gritting his way to get every bucket he can get. You know, that's not selfishness. That's just the way that they function, that they way that they operate. It's got to be Brunson scoring the points. But they're excellent superstars that, you know, are going to connect with their city. I mean, like they're, you know, like they both just fit. They're guys that really fit as the face of a franchise. And, you know, the Pacers and Knicks both have those glue guys that will do anything for you in their blood, where you have Michael Bridges and Josh Hart for the Knicks. And you have, you know, you have Nembhard and Nesmith for the Pacers. And then they have Anunoby, obviously, where OG has just grown so much. He's averaging 18 a game. I mean, you've seen what he's become as an offensive player. He's already one of the best defensive, you know, all-around defenders in the league. You know, the Pacers got Siakam, who's just a terrific player. You know, Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, just you go on down the line, and it's just like if you're both the Pacers and the Knicks, you feel like, wow, this is rare. You know, this opportunity is rare to have a team like that. That's not only good, but it's easy for a city to connect to. It's easy for a city to fall in love with, basically. And so when you have two of those going up against each other and you know, like you're either going to be playing in New York or you're going to be playing in Indiana. And in at least one of those, you know, in game three, you're going to have Indy 500 right to game three. And it's going to be nuts. So, yeah, it's like it's spectacle. It has a chance to be high level for a series like this, especially when you're talking about the 3 and the 4 seed as opposed to the 1 and the 2 seed. Like it's a little different that way, just because you're not looking at, you know, what Cleveland and Boston would have been, which is two teams that just own the league all year. You know, both of these teams are a bit of a surprise. They had to knock off somebody that was supposed to be there to get there. So like there is the sense that everybody knew these teams were good. Everybody kind of figured that there was a hurdle in each of their ways, and they've cleared, you know, they've both cleared a major, major 60 win hurdle. And now they're here.
Now did the schedule pick up its pace as far as scheduling now, because each game is every 2 days, weren't they 3 days?
Sure. Before? Well, yeah, no, I mean, it's TV. So now it's like, all right, what do you have to do to keep the NBA on television every night?
So they're just going to alternate and have a different game every night. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good thing is that the East Coast is on TNT, so we get to hear
Reggie.
Reggie, of course, but more importantly,
yeah, Shaq,
Charles Barkley at the half. Yeah. Charles and all of them, man, they're mm-hmm. funny. They crack me yeah. up. They just laugh at each other. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's some people get on them because they only watch the game so much, but I don't care. They're funny.
Yeah, they know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I'm entertained by those two regardless.
Yeah, it's a good time. Mm-hmm. But this is going to be – Sunday is going to be an incredible commercial for the city of Indianapolis. They're going to mm-hmm. be on national television all day.
They are.
All day.
I mean, you
start with the coverage of the Indianapolis 500, which probably starts around 11 a.m. And maybe even prior to that, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to go well into the afternoon. And then maybe just a little break until it switches over to the NBA playoff game that mm-hmm. happens that night at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, mm-hmm. which will be on national TV. So, well, TNT, so same right. thing. But what a great it is the greatest sports town in America and probably mm-hmm. the world, to be in all honesty. I know people would argue that, but it is. There's just no question to me, because it's always something different. It's sure. always something different, and mm-hmm. it's always something.
Yep. Yeah, no, as far as hosting stuff, it is. I mean, there's you know, you can argue differently based on like how do you connect with your teams, and there's like, you know, like you put your Bostons and New Yorks and your Phillies and stuff like that on the basis of you have four, you know, professional franchises and how closely you connect to them, and that's a whole different ballgame and a different kind of discussion. But in terms of its ability to put on events, yeah, I mean, there's nobody better. It's just such a it's such muscle memory at this point. I mean, they just do it. You know, they're just capable of all of this stuff and know how to make it work and know how to make it function and know how to make it shine. And so, yeah, they're really good at this. And it's just, even when it's stuff that's not necessarily planned in advance, I mean, certainly they're phenomenal when it comes to an All-Star game or a Final Four or something like that, when you know a year in advance that it's coming. But they're, you know, perfectly fine at putting on an NFL playoff game or an NBA playoff game when it's, you don't know it's happening until it happens, or until, you know, your team advances. And they are phenomenal with this stuff. And it's just, I mean, they're able to put it on in such a way that it makes everything work for everybody. Now, I don't know what to tell any of you that are coming into town if you don't have a hotel already. I have no idea. I wish all of you luck. I mean, going to New York in May for a playoff game for me, and I love New York, so this is not me messing with New York, but trying to find a hotel that's reasonably priced is not easy. I'm fortunate. I'm in Queens this year. You know, last year I was in Brooklyn, and then I was in Secaucus, and I'm not messing with New Jersey right now because there's a lot of stuff going on travel-wise in New Jersey.
Had to stay in Queens for the game that is at NMSG, right? That's a pretty good haul. Yeah, Queens is up by Yankee Stadium, across the old river there, and up top. We'll get Dustin back here. I think we lost him for a second, but if he's talking about he has to stay in Queens when he's covering this game, just jump on the subway. But that is definitely a little bit of a haul, but I guess I would have thought that it wouldn't have impacted New York that much, because there is always so much going on that a basketball game is not going to do much, because mainly people that are going to that game already live there close by as far as New York fans. So I wouldn't see how that would impact it. Now, Indianapolis is a different situation, but Dustin jumping back on with us. I was just saying, you have to stay in Queens for this game?
That's nothing. If I can get on the subway, I'm happy.
right. But I'm surprised that it impacts it at all, because it is such a blip.
It's not the playoffs. It's just, there's just stuff happening in New York in May. Like, it's just that. Okay. You know, it's college graduations. It's the simple fact that people want to go to New York. You know, you can't get you can't get in Manhattan for under $300 a night. Like, minimum, like that's you know, like,
well, that so doesn't sound bad for Manhattan during a
it's not for Manhattan, but you know, it's still a lot, still a haul. Like, you're not trying to throw, you know, that much company money at something, or maybe people are, I don't know. But yeah, it's not, like, so I'm trying to take it easy on the, you know, my bosses, but you know, so I'm going Queens, which isn't bad. I mean, you could, as long as you get on the subway at night, that's fine, because you're right at Penn Station, you know, at the Garden.
Oh, that sounds like a blast. I gotta jump right the subway from Manhattan to Queens.
I love New York City subway, man. It's the grimy is part of the romance of New York City, man. Like, you go down.
I get it. But I'm just talking about from a safety standpoint of going heading to Queens at 2 in the morning.
They know.
I'm Dustin DePerrick. You know,
ain't nobody trying to play with me on that subway.
It used to be DePerrico.
It wasn't. we've never ended our. At no point have we ended our last name in vowels. We got all of the consonants that come from Eastern Europe. Don't even worry about that.
I'm deep into watching The Godfather of Harlem right now. So
okay, all right.
I love the series. Yeah. I recommend it. Highly recommend it. But yeah, they've got all the five families in there.
Exactly. Nice. My only point of bringing this up was to say that, like, I don't know what you do if you're coming to Indy for game three. If you're media and you're coming to media for game three, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know where you go. Like how is that not obscenely? I mean, like, do you stay at Fisher's? I mean, that's kind of the best I can come up with. Like, if you're lucky.
You know? I would get an Airbnb.
That's probably not a bad idea, but I'm sure those aren't cheap either. I imagine if you rent out an Airbnb.
Oh, in the month of May, if they were coming. Oh, you mean, yeah, for game three, forget it. I don't even know what they probably. Yeah, it's
for game three in the Indy 500. I mean, first off, if you're renting an Airbnb, if you were the type of person who does that, you did that a year ago. You already have whoever is taking your Airbnb, you know, had it reserved.
I just got back from my daughter's graduation at Ole Miss a week ago.
Oh boy.
And I had to,
first off,
thank you very much. I had to get that thing a year in advance, and it was still high. When I started, I was moving around. I should have grabbed one quickly because I waited one day and it cost me money. I'm telling you. But yeah, I hear you. Hey, we got to take a quick break. Dustin DePierrick from the Indy Star is with us. It's the Pacers prepare for the conference finals starting on Wednesday against the New York Knicks. We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday, joined by Dustin DePierrick from the Indy Star. Make sure you're giving him a follow and keeping up with all of his coverage of the Pacers as they go to put themselves into the NBA Finals as they take on the New York Knicks beginning this Wednesday. And also, there's all kinds of stuff going on, Dustin, in with college or whatever. You've got, of course, the changing of the guard for Indiana basketball, and they put together a new team that we'll see how that works out with no names on that team. They just they said that they were trying to put together a team of winners, so we'll see how that works out for Darren DeVries next year. He's going with a very different style. Reed Bailey is the biggest guy on the team at 6'10", and then they got some guys at 6'9", I think. So, which it's not that big of a deal, because if we think back, it wasn't that long ago when Trace Jackson Davis, who was 6'9", was the guy who was mining the middle for Indiana. Of course, this is not going to be that kind of a big man situation where everything runs through the middle now. And I think that Indiana is going to be much better for that. But it's going to be so interesting to see the contrast in style of play next year from what Darren DeVries has put together. It is a team of guards and wing shooters with some ring protector guys. But guys that were all on winning programs, whether it's from a conference championship or whether it was Sam Alexis from Florida's national championship team, but none of these guys were big names, and so that's going to be different. It's going to be a team that probably has to play with a chip on its shoulder.
You were talking about contrast of styles, right?
Yeah, from what we have used to seeing, for the last 4 years, it has been run the ball runs through the middle. 4 years before that with Archie, I don't know what it was, to be honest with you.
You frequently had two bigs. You had the mover blocker situation with Joey Brunk and Trace Jackson Davis. And you know, that team got even more gummed up, really, than Woodson did. I mean, basically, you remember when Woodson came in, it was a big deal that he intended to go four out, one in, because really the IU played two bigs so often under Archie Miller, whether it was, Jackson Davis and Brunk to start, and then Jackson Davis and Thompson. When Race obviously, had situations where he could move a little bit out, but a lot of times you're putting both of those guys relatively close to the rim, and you did some mover blocker, high low bully ball kind of stuff. And so this is obviously going to be different. And certainly, you've seen the game has become more and more spread out, and you more than you want a big man that's throwing down on the low block and just camping out there. You want one that can move, one that can shoot, one that obviously is going to be dynamic as far as a pick and roll option, whether he's rolling the bucket or shooting from out or popping back or whatever. Obviously that's certainly what you see with the Pacers, Miles Turner's, will occasionally punish a switch. If somebody, basically switches a smaller guy onto him, he'll take him down there and try to score that way. But, his biggest skill is the ability to score at three levels. He can hit you in the mid range. He can play make out of the mid-range, and he can hit a three as much as he can roll the basket and score. And so, you know, that's where the game is going, basically, is more and more spacing and bigs who can play in space, you know, more frequently, who are, you know, capable of scoring at the perimeter and whatnot. And so, you know, you look at, I mean, like, I don't know a lot of these guys, you know, very well in terms of, like, what they bring to the table, but you know, look at Trent Sisley, 6'7", Josh Harris, 6'8", Sam Alexis, 6'8", Nick Dorn, 6'7", Josiah Miles, 6'6", Lamar Wilkerson, 6'5", Reed Bailey, 6'10", Tucker DeRuyce, 6'7". You know, you're looking at guys that are, you know, that can be, might be interchangeable parts, you know, basically have that look of players that can be, you know, play anywhere from 2 to 4, run around a little bit, and have a few guys that can give you different types of bigs that you know, I'm sure there's somebody in there that can post you up, but there's other in there going to be the kind of more free roaming lob threat kind of big men, that can play in space. And again, like, that's where the game is heading. If you have a sense of what you want your team to be, you know, that goes a long way. I mean, again, just still interested to see what this looks like. You know, there's so many moving parts, so many guys that haven't played together. It's hard to say, you know, what this is going to look like. I mean, when you're really starting from, you know, more or less complete scratch and trying to form a team out of nothing, more or less out of ground zero, and what it could be. So, you know, I'm just interested to see. I think just as it goes back to the thing that most stood out to me at the press conference was him saying you don't just need a collection of players, you need a team. And so it does sound like at the very least, Darian DeVries has a sense of what he wants his team to look like and what kind of style he wants it to be, and knows what the parts are supposed to be. And that can go a long way. You know, how in terms of what's the top line talent look like? Is that going to be good enough? You know, that's a tough question. You're not going to know that until it hits the air. But it does at least seem like that's kind of more what he's going through is having one of those kind of more long rangey lineups that can space and switch and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and get bigs that can play in space.
Absolutely. Dustin Empiric with the Indy Star. Thank you as always, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Jim.
Absolutely. Make sure you're giving Dustin a follow and everybody else that was on the program today, including myself. That's going to wrap it up for the program. Looking forward to coming back tomorrow and getting back at it. There's a lot that's going on this week with the Pacers and the Indy 500, and college sports continues as well. Appreciate you being with us. Come back tomorrow. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.